Well, as we found out last week, Joe Biden's pick for chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, had some serious questions about what's actually going on here in America and exhibited a little bit of confusion. Now, I had a bit of a busy week last week, but now that I've got some time on my hands, I thought perhaps I'd offer him a brief. Now, as we all know, if I were to come forward with a brief on the highest matters and most immediate threat to this country, an issue of grave national security, I would go to the Pentagon and I'd give the brief to a lieutenant colonel and he would summarize the notes and think about it. And if they liked it, then I'd have to brief it again, maybe for a colonel who would then pass it on to a one-star general. And eventually, over the course of five or six briefings, I might get to the point where I get a message that says, the general will see you for 10 minutes on 2:22 in the afternoon on Thursday. Have a 10-minute brief ready, and so on. I could actually do it in less than that through the magic of the internet, and I can do it right now. So let's get started with the general's main concern here.
On the issue of critical race theory, et cetera, I'll obviously have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is.
Here's an idea just to start off, General. You know, before you implement an idea throughout the entire military, stand the military down in order to impart this idea on the people who serve in the armed forces of the United States. Now, I'm just an outsider, I'm not a general, but it seems like it'd be a good idea if you had some idea about what that idea was before you make that idea the official idea of the U.S. military. Now, needless to say, a general, I don't have the resources of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but I can tell you a little bit about what's going on here with critical race theory. Critical race theory is essentially critical theory. Everything's better when you add race to it when you're dealing with these kind of people. All of this came from something called the Frankfurt School. So let's just recap a little bit. As a general, you may have heard of this, actually. World War I, big deal in the last century. And at the end of World War I, all of the communists in the world, because that was a really swell idea at the time, sat around, looked at the wreckage of World War I and said, where's our communism? And to their utter amazement, they found out it hadn't arrived. And General, you're going to love this part. The reason that the communism hadn't arrived in the world, according to the scientific theory of Karl Marx, was because capitalism was producing so much prosperity that the workers had nothing to revolt about. There was no rebellion. There was no revolution. In America, some workers even had indoor toilets in their own cars, for God's sakes. So these dedicated communists in the 20s got together and they started something called the Institute for Marxism. Yeah, I'm sure you haven't heard of that. But since it was located in Frankfurt, they called it the Frankfurt School. And they came to this stunning conclusion. They realized that since capitalism was producing so much economic wealth, the communist revolution was not going to come through the workers. It wasn't going to happen economically. So, how do we make it happen? Well, these guys figured out that if it's not going to be the workers that are going to be the van, then let's make it the dispossessed. And this was the brilliant breakthrough theory of the Frankfurt School. Instead of dividing America by class and income, because we're very flexible about these things here in America, what we'll do is we'll go to each one of these minority groups, identity groups, we'll go to everybody with a grievance, basically, and we'll tell them that you are being uniquely oppressed by America and turn all of your rage in towards the middle. Critical theory. Tell homosexuals America is the most homophobic country in history. Tell blacks that slavery is unique to America and that everything that's built in America was built by slaves and stolen from black people. Tell women that this is the most misogynist society in the history of the world, and so on and so on and so on. Turn all of these fringe groups against the middle and use the decency of the American people against them, because the American people don't like to be considered unjust and they want to do something about it. And if anybody starts pushing back, then you use the other tool of the Frankfurt School, which is called political correctness, which essentially comes down to shut up, we explained. Any criticism of this is automatically racist, therefore off the table. That's what the Frankfurt School is. That's what critical theory is. That's what critical race theory is. And that's what you've been implementing throughout the entire United States military without understanding the faintest aspect of what you're doing. It is a communist plot that is on paper. It's not fiction. It's not conspiracy theory. It is perfectly well documented. They're proud of it. Now, if I was defending the country, I would have some idea about what it was I was trying to implement ideologically on our armed forces. I would certainly check and see where this weird, wacky, nutty new idea called critical race theory came from. But again, I understand that as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States military, you don't have the kind of resources available to, you know, a guy in a chair in Los Angeles. So let's move on.
And I want to understand white rage, and I'm white.
General, that's going to come as a real shock. It's not white rage. It's patriot rage. That's why patriotic blacks and patriotic Hispanics and patriotic Asians and patriotic homosexuals and patriotic women see above, feel it. That's why they're angry. And since it's patriot rage, that's why you're not angry.
What is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? What caused that?
Well, General, not to put too fine a point on it, but if you really want to know what caused that, well, the short answer is you did. You did. You and people like you. People like you in the government who have been openly saying now for 6-7 months that the real danger to America are illegal gun owners and extremist thinkers and all of domestic threats posed by Americans who have the patriotic values that are represented by the Constitution of the United States and whose rights are guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. You know, gun owners and people who like to speak their mind. I'm not one of those, fortunately. My guns were lost in a tragic boating accident, and my ability to speak my mind has been taken care of by forces that you should be looking into, but aren't, because you got other things to do. But there's some other reasons why you caused that so-called revolt. What about all of the unresolved questions about elections, General? Now, you were very vocal in saying you're not going to let that Nazi dictator Trump overturn the Constitution, but just as a matter of, you know, thought experiment, what if, General, just hypothetically, what if it could be proven that that election was stolen? I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying what if it was proven? What if it was absolutely ironclad proven that that election had been stolen from the American people? Would you still feel the same way about people being angry about this and going to the Capitol building? Would you? Because if you do, in fact, approve of stolen elections, then you not only don't understand the Constitution, but you are antithetical to it. And the fact that you don't know, the fact that you didn't bother to look, the fact that nobody in the government has bothered to look into this, that no one has any time ever given an explanation for the countless, countless numbers of major irregularities throughout that election, has us just a little bit worried, to be perfectly honest with you. And if you're saying, well, what evidence are you talking about? I'll just start with the basics. 5 states stopped counting at the same time on election night. That's never happened before. You don't find that just a tiny, tiny bit unusual? That actually happened. And does it perhaps strike you, I don't have, again, have the kind of mind that would, you know, qualify me as a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but do you find it odd that of the 5 states that stopped counting on the night of the election for reasons never explained to the American people, that those states were the ones that suddenly in the next day or two caused Joe Biden to pound out this historic victory? Black precincts getting 2 or 3 times number of people voted for Barack Obama. I don't find that any... Oh, of course you don't. What about the weaponization of government, General? Does that bother you? It would bother me, you know? And when we find out that the government, in the form of the IRS, is targeting one group of Americans and not another, and we find out the director of the FBI is just indicted the candidate who's running for president, 45-minute indictment, and then basically said, no, we shouldn't put her in jail. No, that'd be wacky. Now, we find out that the FBI and the CIA are the ones who created evidence to impeach a president who had been fairly elected, I think twice, but certainly once. You don't see that as a form of a state coup and worthy of some kind of civil demonstration? That doesn't strike you as reasonable? Because you are sure thumping your fist on what happened. How could people come here and try to upset the government? How could people come to Washington and try to overthrow the Constitution of the United States? You got it backwards. Again, they didn't go there to overthrow the Constitution of the United States. They went there to enforce it. Got it? And you can throw in all of the lies about the origin of COVID and the treatment for COVID and the actual numbers of COVID and all of the suppression and all the rest of it. You could go and you could look, if you were inclined to, General, to look at big tech and big media censorship of news, which is not only anti-American and a direct violation of the First Amendment, but is in fact the single greatest existential threat to the freedom of this country. These are things that you could have been upset about, but that's not what you're upset about. You had your opinion pre-made and ready to go, and I suspect that's why you've got the job.
It's important that we understand that, because our soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, and guardians, they come from the American people. So it is important that the leaders, now and in the future, do understand it.
General Milley, you haven't got the faintest idea of the people who serve in the U.S. military, because if you did, you wouldn't be targeting them. You wouldn't be instructing them that they themselves are the enemy of the American people, because that's what critical race theory does. These are the people that love this country and are asking questions that no one in the government is asking, and you have turned them into the enemies of the United States military, and you're wondering why? You're literally saying there, we really ought to know what goes on in the minds of our servicemen. You don't want to know, General, what's going on in the minds of your servicemen. Believe me, you really don't want to know. You really don't.
I've read Mao Zedong. I've read Karl Marx. I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist.
Here are some people you might want to be reading. You know, people from this particular century, this particular threat. Take a look at names like Gramsci and Alinsky. Why don't you start reading what those guys are writing about or have written about? Why don't you look at how those policies of destroying America's morale from the inside in order to bring the United States down so we can have a collectivist communist government, maybe you could look at some of these actual strategies laid out by Saul Alinsky to destroy the United States of America that you are now a complete and absolute executor of. You are doing precisely exactly what these open communists and enemies of this country said needed to be done in order to destroy the country, and you're doing it. And you're absolutely mystified, stunned, outraged, offended about why people have a problem with you and this government. You're showing the same kind of situational awareness about the American people as you apparently had of Kabul and surrounding areas around the airport. When I wrote A History of the Cold War, I told myself when I was writing about Vietnam that at least I would never live to see another disgrace worse than that last helicopter out of Saigon. Now, that was two years after the United States military had left. The Democrats had basically gone back on the deal that we made with South Vietnam, no longer supported the government, no longer supported the people that had supported us, basically cut and ran from the people who we were trying to help defend their own country. We just headed out of there in a big old hurry. Let me know if any of this sounds familiar to you. And I thought, I'll never see a disgrace like that again, but I was wrong. I saw civilians falling from a C-17 jet, and they were falling from a C-17 jet because the United States military could not put a secure perimeter around an airport. All of those people struggling to get on board one C-17. Again, I'm not chairman of the Joint Chiefs. I'm just an amateur. But I have an understanding that we have more than one of those cargo airplanes. So I'm sure there's a perfectly good reason for why all of this happened, and I'm sure it's our fault. Secretary of Defense says that we don't have the capability to go into Kabul and look for Americans. That's what the Secretary of Defense said. My response to that is, well, then maybe we shouldn't be paying you $700 billion a year. Maybe the left is right. Maybe if you can't do something that simple, we don't really need 11 carrier strike groups, and we don't need all of these stealth bombers and stealth fighters and all of these F-35s that cost hundreds of millions of dollars each. If we can't go into a neighborhood in a third world country, set up a perimeter and start knocking on doors or kicking them down and finding our own people, if we can't do that after the trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that we have spent with you and your buddies over in the defense industry, if we can't do that, then I think it's time to make some budget cuts. Because if all we can do is send one jet into an airport and whoever gets there first, you know, first come, first serve, I think we can do that for significantly less money. Matter of fact, I think the money we could save could be used to apply to a private firm, let's say, that hired actual soldiers who knew what they were doing. And I think they'd probably do a better job. Anyway, here's the final thing for you, General. You know, a lot of times, again, I feel so out of my league here addressing the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking military commander in the United States military. But there is a term that you're clearly not familiar with, and you might want to look this one up. It's called denial of assets. Here's how it works. If it turns out that you have to retreat, form a retrograde motion, strategically backpedal, or just duck out in the middle of the night in the dark, and you leave behind weapons and equipment, well, those weapons and equipment aren't just lost. They can be captured by the enemy and used against you. So destruction of assets means that if we cannot take it with us, we're going to destroy it so that our enemies don't have the chance to use it against us. But under your brilliant leadership, here's what we left the Taliban as we ran from Afghanistan in the middle of the night. This is a partial list of what we left behind. 2,000 armored vehicles, including Humvees and MRAPs, the up-armored trucks. We left 75,989 motor vehicles. We left them 45 UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters. That's a state-of-the-art means of delivering troops, and they've got 45 of them. We left them 208 aircraft. 208, probably more than that. They didn't have an Air Force before the Taliban. Now they do. They won't have to use jetliners next time, you see, because we've given them their very own sizable Air Force. We left 600,000 small arms, including M16s, M249 SAWs, the squad assault weapons, the little light machine guns. We left them M24 sniper systems. We left them 50 cals. We left them 1,394 M203 grenade launchers. We left them M134 miniguns, 20mm gas. Gatling guns, and of course, ammunition for all of that. We left them 61,000 M203 rounds to go into those grenade launchers, and we also just misplaced, I guess, you know how it is when you're moving in a hurry, 20,040 grenades. We left them howitzers. We left them mortars with thousands of rounds. And of all of the things that scare me the most, this is just me, we left 16,000 pairs of night vision goggles. The only reason we were able to outfight these people for 20 years was because we owned the night. We don't own the night anymore. Thanks, General. That's going to be appreciated in the future. Oh, here's a fun one. We left them explosives. We left them C4, Semtex. We left them detonators, shape charges, thermite, incendiaries. You know, the one weapon that they were able to improvise that had a real effect on American troops, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, the IED, the improvised explosive device. Well, they won't have to go to Iran for those anymore. We get to kill our own people with our own explosives now, thanks to you. We left them pallets with millions of dollars in U.S. currency. All the tax money I've ever had to give up in my life, and all the tax money everybody watching this ever had to give up in their lives, and all of the tax money that their children and their friends ever had to give up in the course of their lives is now on pallets in the hands of the Taliban, so they can buy more means to come over here and kill us, because you don't understand how to set up a perimeter and you don't know what denial of assets means. Oh, and we left them millions of rounds of ammunition too, including but not limited to 20 million rounds of 7.62mm ammunition, that's for their AK-47s, and 9 million rounds of 50 caliber machine guns. 50 caliber rounds will go through an engine block. So what do we do about all of this? General, I'm afraid I have some bad news. If I were to fix this problem, and I can't, but if I could, here's what I would do. First thing I would do is I would cashier every single general and admiral in the United States military. No exceptions, none. Now, it is true that if we did that, we would lose a few really good people. But the way I look at it, it's the same thing as flooding a compartment on a ship that's taken a torpedo. We got guys in there trying to fix the repairs. They're trying to plug the hole. Well, we either seal these doors or the whole ship's going down. We're going to have to seal those men away, and they're going to have to sacrifice their lives to save the ship. And those generals and admirals and all the rest of them who were worth keeping in the first place will fully understand why all of them have to go. I would implement policy that says that no one in the chain of command, down from the President of the United States all the way down to the lowest combat infantryman, no one can order military men or women into combat unless they have served in combat themselves. Now, when I say in combat, I mean things like if you were a captain of a destroyer or a submarine or you were a fighter pilot, that kind of thing. You don't get to put people in harm's way unless you've been in harm's way yourself. And the reason I say that is because I noticed what you guys in the Pentagon did many, many, many years ago, back with the M2 Bradley fighting vehicle. Turned into a pretty decent vehicle, but no thanks to you. When the Bradley was first commissioned by the military and delivered to the Pentagon, it had a few problems. It would take a round, and all of the paint and hot metal would spall into the inside of this and either damage or kill the troops that would have been inside there. So when we realized that the Bradley had real problems, the military, of course, went through the tests that they're required to do in order to show that this vehicle is safe and effective. So they fired some RPGs into the Bradleys, and they exploded. So then they did the tests again. Now, this time they fired the RPGs into the Bradleys, and fortunately, they didn't explode. And they didn't explode because they filled the gas tanks with water on those tests. Bradleys don't run on water. They filled the Bradleys with water because the generals who had purchased that weapon system, been responsible for its development, would rather have American soldiers die in flames than have their careers be risked. All of you have got to go. All of you. You've got to go. I'm sorry. Nobody wearing a star is going to stay there anymore. And as far as the Pentagon is concerned, I think we need to turn that into maybe a skating rink. You know, something where as you got more advanced, you could move closer to the middle. You know, we've never won a war since we've had the Pentagon. In fact, we've never really won a war since the War Department became the Defense Department. The Pentagon is where the real problem is. The Pentagon is the problem. And the reason that the Pentagon is the problem is very simple. The Pentagon is the problem because the Pentagon is a palace, and it's a palace and a temple. It's a temple filled with priests. And in order to rise through the priesthood, you have to be good at things like political things, like telling people above you what they want to hear, and making sure that the things that you did wrong are blamed on the people below you. You know, that kind of person that would rise through the ranks and become, oh, I don't know, just off the top of my head, chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, let's say. All of you've got to go. And when people say, well, what are you going to do about the meetings? How are you going to have meetings? You have to have a lot of meetings for the military. I've got an answer for that, actually. Instead of having everybody come to the temple and kowtow to the gods and priests there, why don't you have the meetings out there in the various areas where their particular problem is? Why don't you meet at Central Command or at an army base? And I'm not talking about a glamorous army base. I'm not talking about meeting on a base in Afghanistan. Why don't you go meet in Warner Robins Air Force Base? Or why don't you meet someplace like, Fort Benning, something like that? And when you get there, leaders, why don't you stay in officers' quarters that are reserved for the actual officers in the military? How about that? How about instead of this five-star treatment and the five-star accommodations, why don't you live in the barracks and eat the food that the people who are going to be doing the dying for you are eating, and so on? Why don't you just decentralize all of this? Because ultimately, General, this is the biggest failing of all. You do not understand and haven't got the faintest idea of what the threats are to this country. You're not only fighting the last war, you're losing the last war. So what would we do for a new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Well, first of all, they would be majors, captains, and maybe a few lieutenant colonels just a few hours ago. But once the people that knew what they were doing knew what the actual fight was, once they were promoted, these are the kind of people I'd be looking for chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'd be looking for guys like, let's say, Bill Halsey, who was once asked, could the United States Navy not share the Pacific Ocean peacefully with the Imperial Japanese Navy? To which Halsey replied, no, absolutely we could. We'll take the top half and they can have the bottom. Or I'd be looking for guys like Curtis LeMay, who was the father of Strategic Air Command, whose motto was, peace is our profession. He was once asked, well, General, don't you find that a little ironic? Here you are with nuclear bombers and you say that peace is your profession. Don't you see a little bit of contradiction in that? And LeMay said, well, peace is our profession. War is just something we do for kicks. You know why I'd want people like that? I'd want people like that not because they would be unchained, but because they would be chained. And I want our enemies to be afraid of us. Not laughing at us, not mocking us on Twitter, not parading around with our weapons, and certainly not coming back to us in a year or 5 or 10, carrying the weapons and the failure that you have given them to strike at us again. But if I could bring anybody back from the past for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, I think I'd bring back George Patton. And all he would really have to do to get started is to walk into that chamber of Congress, walk right up to where you were sitting, and slap you as hard as he could right in your fat, stupid face.